What's going on, friends? Welcome to another edition of the Locked On Panthers podcast. Billy Rossetti with you guys here on a Thursday as we're rolling through crossover week with the rest of the NFC South. Hope you guys have been enjoying all the talk so far, talking through all the teams. But we finally made it to Thursday, which means we finally made it to Panthers Day. So the four of us, you'll get to hear our thoughts on the Panthers offseason and our thoughts on them going into the 2020 season. Hopefully we could see them in the 2020 season, but it was a great conversation. Myself, Aaron Freeman, Ross Jackson, David Harrison, great group of guys, all having just a lot of fun this week. It was really good to chat with them. Of course, today's episode being brought to you by rockauto.com, amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com, family owned, and just have all the parts you need no matter what make or model your car has. You can just go online to rockauto.com. They have, again, just whatever parts you need, taillights, headlights, oil, whatever you could think of that your car might need, Rock Auto has it for you. And again, you could choose. It's very easily, it's very easy to navigate, and you just search for your car, your model, whatever the case may be. Rock Auto has it for you. Family owned for over 20 years. Great stuff, and we've been very fortunate to have their support now for these last few weeks. So go check them out. And of course, when you do check them out and you check them out online and you see the box where they ask where you found out about them, make sure you write in Locked On so that they know we sent you, so that they know that you're supporting them, you're supporting us, and we just can all continue to support each other. So rockauto.com, go check them out today for all the car parts you will need. Before we get into crossover Thursday here, talking about the Panthers, a quick note that I want to mention. There was a story today over at the Riot Report, written by my good buddy Josh Klein, good friend of the show here. And of course, it's surrounding fan attendance. It's, of course, a story that's been popping up amongst teams across the league in terms of how many fans, if fans are going to be able to attend, how much they're going to be limited. And according to the report, or at least, you know, the gist of the article that Josh wrote, it sounds like the Panthers are going to follow a path similar to that of the Jacksonville Jaguars. And what I mean by that is the Jaguars have already announced that they are going to have a 25% stadium capacity for the 2020 season. And, you know, we don't know what the Panthers are going to do with season tickets, but the Jaguars are a team that have also canceled season tickets. So they look like they're going to go just kind of straight single game tickets if fans want to go. But just in terms of the number of fans that are going to be able to go, it's going to kind of mirror the Jaguars, because they're going 25% capacity, which is going to put them at around, I think, 19,000 to 20,000 fans. The Panthers are going to be around that. If the Panthers go 25% stadium capacity, that would put them a shade under 19,000 fans. And so again, as Josh Klein is writing, probably within the next couple of weeks, you know, because they're still talking with the NFL, they're still talking with local and state government officials to figure out what exactly their plans are going to be. And it's also likely that if fans are going to be able to attend Panthers games this season, they will be required to wear a mask. And that's something we've also seen a couple teams also announce. The Pittsburgh Steelers are one, for example. I think, if I remember correctly, I could be wrong on this, the Bengals might be on that list. But I know for sure the Steelers have already come out and said that masks will be required for fans attending games. And it's probably going to be likely for all fans, or all stadiums that will allow fans. And again, that's the key point. If they allow fans, speculation has been running now, just the way their officials have been talking, that Philadelphia will be an example of a team that will not have fans at their stadium in 2020. Now, they did kind of backtrack on their comments a bit from earlier this week and saying that it is a fluid situation, but we could say right now, as it stands, the decision would likely be that there would be no fans in attendance at Eagles games. The Philadelphia Phillies have already announced that they will not have any fans in attendance at their home games this season. So we'll see if the Eagles follow suit. But the way it's talk, you know, the way it's sounding here, the Panthers will at least be able to have fans. In fact, that's kind of a comment that Josh Klein wrote in from David Tepper, or actually, I should say, quoting David Tepper from when he appeared on CNBC back in May, when Mr. Tepper said, "You won't be playing having full stadiums, but that doesn't mean you can't have some fans in the stadium either. If you're comfortable being in a closed airplane for a cross-country trip 18 inches apart, maybe with two seats in between you and being 5 feet away from each other, you might be comfortable in an open-air stadium." He also added, "There should be some amount of fans in the stadiums, depending on what locale and where you are and what the local rules are, though there could possibly be." So again, that's you know, as Josh also writes regarding season ticket holders, he says the Panthers are expected to inform PSL owners who choose to roll over their season ticket payments to the 2021 season that they will have the ability to buy tickets in 2020 and will only have the option to purchase within their price range unless those areas are sold out. Group tickets and single game tickets will be refunded, and even some PSL owners may not have the opportunity to buy season tickets due to the limited capacity. So we'll see what happens. Again, we've already seen some teams that have basically ended season tickets for 2020, those being the Jaguars, the Ravens, the Chiefs, and the 49ers. And then about a dozen other teams have already offered opt-outs for season tickets, and those being the Bills, the Bears, Bengals, Browns, Packers, Texans, Rams, Saints, Giants, Jets, Eagles, Steelers, Seahawks, and Titans. So, again, probably within the next couple of weeks, we'll find out what the Panthers are doing. And he also notes about how the NFL and the NFLPA are currently still negotiating the preseason testing protocols, things like that. But oh, by the way, there's actually two teams whose rookies are scheduled to report to camp in 2 days, I believe. If I remember correctly, I think they said Saturday is the scheduled reporting date for the rookies of the Chiefs and the Texans. And of course, the current plan for the Panthers was that they wanted their rookies to report on the 21st. That's this coming Tuesday. And then a week from today is when quarterbacks and injured players are tentatively scheduled to report to camp. So it's not the best of situations that we're still kind of fighting the preseason battle and testing protocols, things like that. We're still doing all this here in the middle of July when we're now less than 2 weeks away from all teams being fully reported to camp. So it sounds like we still have a long way to go and not a lot of time to figure it out. But you never know. Things can change quickly. But again, as more teams start to announce their fan capacity rules for 2020, again, as Josh Klein writes, and you can read his article on the Riot Report, but again, the gist of it is that the Panthers will look to have about 20,000 fans at their home games this season. And again, that, of course, would include week one. They are still scheduled to open the season at home September 13th against the Las Vegas Raiders. So we'll see what happens there. But enough about that side of the Panthers stories right now. Let's talk about the actual on-field product of the Carolina Panthers with, of course, myself and the other guys in the NFC South. So here's the continuation of the Ultimate Division crossover roundtable week, whatever you want to call it. It's Carolina Panthers Thursday. So here you go. Hope you guys enjoy it. And Also, have yourselves a great rest of your Thursday, if I don't see you. And we'll see you back here on Friday. Friday will be a fun episode on the crossover as well, as we have kind of a wild card week as we talk about the preseason NFC South team that was voted on by us hosts and some of you fans out there. So check that out to see how those teams ended up being voted in. But for now, here's the four of us talking about the Carolina Panthers. What's going on, guys? Welcome to the Thursday edition of the Ultimate NFC South Division Crossover. It's Panthers Day. Bill Rossetti back with you guys here. Hope you guys are having a great week. I am joined, of course, by three of the top guys here in the network, three of my boys here in the division, and I'm just going to let them go around and introduce themselves to you.
What's up, everybody? Ross Jackson here at Ross Jackson NOLA on Twitter, host of Locked On Saints podcast. Glad to be here with you guys.
Aaron Freeman, host of Locked On Falcons on Twitter, at FalcFans, FalcFans.
David Harrison, one host of the Locked On Bucks podcast on Twitter, at DHarrison82.
And shout out to James Yarko, who is taking care of kind of the other half of the Bucks podcast today. But shout out to him and hope he's doing well. And, of course, you can follow me at Bill_Rossetti. We're here to talk about the Panthers. We've made it to Thursday of this week, and we've had a lot of fun this week discussing the rest of the NFC South. We've made it to the Panthers, and in my opinion, certainly a fascinating team to talk about just in terms of the rebuild that they're obviously going to be going through. We know, of course, it's obviously the Panthers fans that are listening know all too well, but for the other guys, you know, other listeners that are just getting back into the swing of things after everything that's been going on, the Panthers, of course, have basically remade themselves. Obviously, brand new coaching staff led by Matt Rhule, formerly of Baylor, brings over his defensive coordinator, Phil Snow, to run the Panthers' defense. And then they brought over Joe Brady, who, of course, was the passing game coordinator at LSU. So he was basically the man behind arguably the greatest offense we've ever seen in college football history with Joe Burrow and the LSU Tigers. And, of course, they have a new signal caller, Cam Newton. It was an end of an era. They decided to release Cam Newton, who, of course, has now just in the last couple of days signed with the New England Patriots. Teddy Bridgewater is now the guy coming over from the Saints. Started, of course, five games in place of the injured Drew Brees, giving them about $21 million a year. A couple other intriguing offseason additions. Traded for Russell Okung at left tackle, but it was a trade that also sent out Trey Turner, their stud left guard, sending him to the LA Chargers. Addressed wide receiver, signing Robbie Anderson to a two-year deal. And then a couple of other veteran guys like Stephen Weatherly, John Miller, Justin Burris, Eli Apple, another former Saint, coming over to fill the secondary or the cornerback spot vacated by James Bradbury, who's now with the Giants. And the Panthers made a little bit of history in the draft, becoming the first team ever to have seven draft picks and have all seven of them be on the defensive side of the ball, headlined, of course, by Auburn defensive tackle Derrick Brown with the seventh overall pick. And then they added Yitor Gross-Matos, the Penn State edge, and Southern Illinois safety Jeremy Chinn in round two. Troy Pride, the Notre Dame corner in round four. Kenny Robinson out of West Virginia in round five. Baylor D-tackle Bravin Roy in round six. And Stanley Thomas Oliver, the Florida International corner, in round seven. So basically a brand new team, you know, almost starting from scratch if you're the Carolina Panthers. And so I'm really fascinated now to hear these guys' opinions on their thoughts of the Panthers, what their outlook is in 2020, how they kind of stand in the division, and maybe even just kind of going forward, how they see this rebuilding process going. So what do you guys think? What's your thoughts right now on this Panthers team?
I'll go first. I think what's fascinating to me about the Panthers is in the Ron Rivera era for nearly a decade, they, despite, you know, having the star power of Cam Newton at the quarterback position, they were always trying to be a defensive driven team. They were always going to be, we're going to run the football, we're going to play great defense, and then we're going to let Cam be Cam, and that's how we're going to win. And when the Panthers were successful in some of those years, including making it all the way to the Super Bowl in 2015, that's the type of identity that the team had. And seemingly under Matt Rhule, with the hiring of Joe Brady, it seems like at least for the near term, and you know, I know Matt Rhule also buys into the sort of let's be physical identity, but when you look at this roster, it seems like they've flipped. And if the Panthers are going to be a competitive team this year, it's going to be driven by Teddy Bridgewater and Christian McCaffrey and Joe Brady and the additions that they made at the wide receiver position with Robbie Anderson, you know, possible upgrades at the offensive line with, you know, Russell Okung and John Miller. And their defense is kind of going through a rebuild because they lost Luke Kuechly. They lost some other playmakers up front. You know, their secondary is going to be kind of revamped. They lost some players there. So it's one of those things where it looks like Matt Rhule's long-term plan is to rebuild the defense, and taking 7 draft picks this year is sort of laying that foundation. But it seems like that's going to be something that's going to take the better part of 2 or 3 years to get this defense back to a level that would be familiar to Panther fans as far as what they were potentially at their heights under Ron Rivera. And in the meantime, they're going to be primarily an offensive driven team. And, you know, when I look at this offense, I see a lot of, you know, pieces that I like with Bridgewater, with McCaffrey. You know, DJ Moore, I think is coming into his own as an NFL wide receiver. I've been a big fan of Robbie Anderson in New York. And I feel like the situation that he's had in New York, not only from a coaching standpoint, a quarterback standpoint, has held him back in a lot of ways, and he could be a potential star in this league in the right situation. And maybe that's in Carolina, and maybe some of the changes they made on the offensive line can lead to that being a little bit more stable than it has been in recent years. So I think there's a lot of things to like about this Panthers offense, which is why, even though earlier this week I seemed a little dismissive of the Panthers, I do think this team has a chance to you know, throw some, you know, wrenches into the gears of other teams, particularly in this division, and not necessarily be, you know, this 3-13 rebuild team that I've seen some people in the media sort of suggest this team as being the season. I think this is going to be a team that has the potential to be very competitive throughout the season.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think I'm probably a little bit higher on the Carolina Panthers than a lot of other people are. I'm not going to go out on a limb and say that they're a playoff team in 2020 necessarily, but I do think they're going to be more competitive than people give them credit for. And yeah, you look at that offense again, kind of echoing what you guys have already said. I mean, when you think Panthers, you know, obviously you have Cam Newton, but you also think defense. I mean, going back to all the way back to the inception of their franchise. I mean, you had Kerry Collins, you had Muhammad out there, but you also had guys like Kevin Green. You had Sam Mills out there. I mean, some very good defensive squads in this franchise's history. I look at this offense, man, and it's just fun. Like, I imagine if I were trying to coach an offense, if I were trying to scheme up an offense and game plan with some offensive weapons, I mean, DJ Moore, versatile. Robbie Anderson, versatile. Curtis Samuel, versatile. Christian McCaffrey, the pride of Castle Rock, Colorado. I mean, come on, get out of here. Teddy Bridgewater, a guy who not only has the intelligence, but, you know, a lot of people talk about his arm and say he can't get the ball downfield. Well, I mean, not for nothing, guys, but, you know, when you have guys like DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, Curtis Samuel, Christian McCaffrey, you only need to get the ball downfield about 40, 50 yards. Teddy Bridgewater can do that. Those guys, if you're standing on the 20, they can take it the rest of the way. You don't need to throw a bomb from the 20-yard line to the goal line necessarily to get that big play. I just kind of feel like with the way that this offense is built, you're going to get a lot of short, quick passes with a lot of misdirection, probably a lot of quote-unquote pick plays, a lot of picks going on there, a lot of trying to get guys loose early on in routes. And then see what they can do with the ball afterwards. Or you're going to get a lot of punt passes on, you know, 3rd and longs, maybe a 2nd and long, where they basically flip the field trying to hit a home run until they really get their legs under them and find out who they're going to be as a team. Because, I mean, like you said, from the bottom to the top, I mean, from the quarterback to the wide receiver group, the only thing that's really familiar with this team is Christian McCaffrey. But even still, how is Christian going to be utilized in this team? In this offense, because they paid him a lot of money and you got to keep him healthy, and running backs don't have that history. So you can't just come out in 2020 and say, well, we don't have a whole lot of familiarity, so we'll just give it to Christian 25 times a day and call it a day and expect to be successful, because that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I got to agree with a lot of what I'm hearing here, but in particular with David mentioning, you know, what is this team going to be? What is this team going to look like? We know, but what is this team going to be? What is the identity of the Carolina Panthers with their new look? And I think that that's part of what you're going to see this team continue to sort of work out all throughout the season. I am also pretty high on Carolina. I do think that they're at the bottom of the division here in 2020, but gosh, do they have the building blocks necessary to continue to build after that? Absolutely, yes. They gave Matt Rhule a nice, cushy, long-term contract, let him know you have time to get all this in order unless we're tied to you, then you're out of here. But they've at least put him on a deal to where he knows he has a little bit of time to get this all worked out. He got 3 years with Teddy Bridgewater, 2 years with Robbie Anderson, and then you have this, you know, revamped defense. Even at the beginning of the draft, I was at a point to where I was about to be done with the Carolina Panthers when they took Isaiah Simmons over. I'm sorry, when they took Derek Thomas over Isaiah Simmons. But then they turn around and they add a player that has a very similar skill set, but just happens to be from a school that nobody's ever heard of, in Jeremy Chinn, who I think is going to be absolutely electrifying in the NFL. And I can't wait to see what they do with him, and especially what a guy like Matt Rhule is going to be able to do with him as well. I know Matt Rhule is able to put together some pretty fantastic offenses like we've seen in Baylor, but we've also seen Baylor over his time be the only team in that conference with an actual defense for the past few years. And so we've seen the emphasis there. So I'm really, really interested to see what it is that these guys are going to do. But the big thing is just going to be figuring out what the identity of this team is. What do they do? What's their trademark? What it is that sets them apart when they are competing against these other teams. Look, Teddy Bridgewater, I personally have had very close look at Teddy Bridgewater. Teddy Bridgewater is absolutely in position to be back, if you will. I mean, what we saw from him in New Orleans was outstanding. We saw him get the ball deep in New Orleans. We also saw him keep the ball in between sort of that short to intermediate area that Drew Brees likes to work. He's very scheme versatile. He can do all those things. He can take the shots when he wants to take the shots. But the thing about Teddy Bridgewater is that you're not going to get the risk. You're going to get the shots, but they're all going to be calculated. I'm a fan of that style of play. I think Teddy Bridgewater bringing that to a team that's in the midst of a bit of a, let me say, reload or a revamp, I think that that's good. I mean, I think losing Luke Kuechly is huge for this team, obviously, and we'll see what it is that they're able to do, but they still put some pretty good players there into the secondary with their draft. I'm sorry, not the second, the second level with their draft. And Jeremy Chinn could potentially play there as well. So I'm excited about Carolina. I don't know that they jump off the page for me in 2000 and or they jump off the screen for me the way that they jump off the page here in 2020, but I'm very excited to see what they do 2021 and beyond.
Yeah, I think you guys all hit the nail on the head. You know, this is kind of the start of what could be something really good. And really, obviously, too, I think one of the other key questions with this team certainly is, how do they replace Luke Kuechly? You know, and that's where Shaq Thompson is obviously going to come into play. You know, he's now going to be the leader, I think, of not just that linebacker group, but definitely this defense as a whole. You know, they gave him the big money last year, and now it's time for him to go earn it. You know, they went out and they signed Tyre Whitehead for the linebacker position. They also have, you know, you'll still see some other intriguing linebackers there as well. Jermaine Carter is probably going to get the first crack at the middle linebacker position. And, you know, I've always kind of been a fan of Jermaine Carter, and so I'm excited to see him really take more of a sort of, say, a leadership role, I guess, in this defense in the middle there. But a lot of good stuff there from you guys. We kind of touched on where we stand. I think we're all in agreement that this year they're at the bottom of the barrel in the division, but I think we're also all in agreement, it seems, that they're going to be a little better than what the rest of the nation seems to think. I mean, like Aaron mentioned, a lot of people seem to think this is a team destined for three or four wins, and maybe in the running for a number one pick. I don't think they're going to be that bad. I think this team, this offense at least, is talented enough that they're going to win a couple of games just through that. So they could probably get to 5 or 6 wins. They're probably still going to pick in the top 10 in next year's draft, but they're going to be competitive in a lot of these games. So, like I said, definitely one of the more fascinating teams I think to follow this year is going to be the Panthers. So you guys have an idea now of what we think for the 2020 Panthers. We'll come back and touch on just what we think of, you know, overall, and just some questions that we might have on the Panthers. We'll do that in a minute. And we're back here talking about the Carolina Panthers here on the NFC South Ultimate Division Crossover, actually wrapping up talking about the teams with the Panthers. We've got our big wild card day tomorrow with something I think a lot of you guys are going to like. And some of you have kind of made your voices heard a little bit in this. So kind of a spoiler, not too much of a spoiler alert, but I think you guys are going to enjoy what we've got brewing on Friday. But now we're going to talk about just some questions that these guys might have on the 2020 Panthers and, you know, just kind of what we see going forward. So what do you guys think? You know, what are you guys' concerns and, you know, any questions you guys have on this team?
Well, my question, you know, I don't know if Bill, you'd be the best person to answer this. Maybe Ross is a better person to answer this, but, you know, the concerns about the Panthers secondary, and we've touched upon this quite a bit already on these shows all week long, because we know playing in the NFC South, you know, you're facing some of the premier wide receivers in the NFL. You can argue that, you know, Michael Thomas, Julio Jones, and Mike Evans are possibly three of the top three wide receivers in the NFL, but certainly three out of the top five or six wide receivers pretty universally there. And, you know, you're going to need guys on the back end that can cover. You know, and they picked up Eli Apple to replace James Bradbury. They have Jeremy Chinn, you know, filling in at strong safety. Do you feel like this is a secondary that can compete in this NFC South? And, you know, of course, I mentioned Ross just because he's experienced the year of Eli Apple. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's having pleasant memories of that or nightmares, but, you know, maybe he can fill us in a little bit on maybe what the Panthers might be getting with Eli.
Yeah, I'll touch on the secondary, and then I'll definitely get Ross in, because then at least we can get some insight too on what Eli Apple is going to bring to the table. But yeah, if there's a weak point on this Panthers defense, it's definitely the secondary, I think, because of the youth that they have. Dante Jackson certainly, I think, took a step back in year two. I thought he had a pretty good rookie season, but not so much. Injuries certainly hurt him a little bit in year two, so he needs to have a bit of a bounce back year. Getting Eli Apple certainly gives them that bit of a veteran presence that they obviously lost with James Bradbury. And, you know, so with him and Trey Boston, you've at least got some veteran leadership to kind of mix in with these young guys. But I mean, that's going to be the key, is they just got to develop a lot of these young guys, even like Troy Pride, really intrigued by him. I saw him at the Senior Bowl. I thought he played really well. So getting him in the fourth round, develop him a little bit, I think he can eventually turn into a solid starter. Even Stanley Thomas Oliver, you know, I watched a little bit of him after the draft. And, you know, this is a kid that only has about 2 years of starting experience at the cornerback position. I believe he was a wide receiver when he came to Florida International and then converted to cornerback, actually ended up being on the all-conference team during his short time at cornerback. So he seems like he's picked up the position pretty well. So really it's just the development of this team. And yeah, obviously the challenge is going to be there, because I mean, when you're facing guys like Mike Evans, Julio Jones, Chris Godwin, six times total out of your 16 games, you're going to be tested a lot. And that's going to be big, I think, for a team like this. But like I said, I wanted to get Ross in here quick too, because definitely think Ross can give us some quick insight as well on what Eli Apple can bring to the secondary.
I'm happy to say I'm very excited to see Eli Apple in Carolina. he was originally going to sign with the Raiders. That deal fell through. That's imagine that had something to do with the fact that he had the two separate ankle injuries during the season. Physicals and everything were tough with the way that this offseason worked and all. And so if the deal goes through in terms of with Carolina, because I'm not clear if they've just agreed to terms or if he's fully signed, Bill, maybe you might be able to figure that out. But wherever it is, if he's able to follow through and he's able to be there. Look, the thing about Eli Apple is that he's a guy that is he'll probably start the season off pretty strong if he wins that starting role opposite Dante Jackson, I imagine. And he is somebody that just has it's not only the ability, but it's kind of the penchant, the sort of affinity for just trickling off throughout the season. And sometimes it's injury related, sometimes it's not. It kind of just depends upon the system that you want him to fit in. If Carolina's going to go to a little bit more of a man style defense where they're going to expect their you know, corners to line up one-on-one against these guys, and sometimes they have safety help and sometimes they don't, then Eli Apple's going to get a lot of attention early on in games and quarterbacks are going to go after him. If it's a little bit more of a zone sit back, or maybe even if it's a zone match system, then it kind of plays a little bit more into Eli Apple's strengths. But for the most part, you know, you carry the guy beyond 15 yards down, you know, 15 yards from the line of scrimmage, and then all of a sudden he's out of position almost immediately. And so I think that that is a little bit about, you know, you're going to get better play from him in zone than you're going to get from man. So if he fits the scheme a little bit better, you'll get a better showing from him. But like the Saints, for instance, they wanted to play a lot more man because that's where their number one corner, Marshon Lattimore, excels. And they just weren't able to do that, or were putting Eli Apple in a position to where he wasn't playing his style. And so it really kind of comes down to what fit is there for him and what it is that Carolina expects to do with that defense. But he can either be a liability for you immediately, or he can quickly turn into one depending upon what you're asking him to do, if that makes sense.
Good insight there.
So as a born and bred Buckeye, I'd like to also throw in that these issues with Eli Apple are not new. They were there in college, and they were pretty much clearly going to be there when the Giants overdrafted the heck out of him. You know, good kid, but I mean, you know, Eli's a guy he's always kind of relied on his raw athletic ability to win. And even in college, you go back and see that on the Saturdays where he wasn't winning with his raw athleticism, you didn't see a whole lot of fight back, and you didn't see a whole lot of turning to leaning on, you know, technical skills and leveraging his teammates and leveraging field position and all that stuff that you need to see in the NFL. So it just kind of followed him throughout his career. So more power to, you know, all the luck wished to him, of course, but also looking forward to seeing Chris Godwin and Mike Evans take advantage of that matchup twice in the NFC South here this year. Bill, my question for you, unfortunately, doesn't have to do with the 2020 Carolina Panthers, and I'm sure you're probably sick of already talking about it. I know your listeners have already heard your take on it, but Buccaneers fans are fairly passionate about Mr. Cam Newton, and James is obviously very passionate about Cam Newton. So what are your thoughts about humble Cam leaving Carolina and, I don't know, cocky Cam, bravado Cam emerging in New England?
Listen, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, Cam's just been a competitive guy throughout his entire career, right? Going back to his days at Auburn, even when he was at Florida before he transferred out of there. He's just been a fiery guy. You know, you could argue that Ron Rivera kind of tempered him down, but clearly he was not – I mean, he basically came out and said he did not want to leave Carolina, and I totally don't blame him. Listen, I was always under the thought that when the offseason started and it was all the talk of, you know, what are the Panthers going to do with Cam Newton? Are they going to move on, this, that, and the other thing? I thought they'd give him at least one more year, you know, because this was going to be the last year of his contract. He was only going to do about $18 million, which obviously is a bargain, as we've seen quarterbacks. I mean, on average, I mean, I think this year they're paying Teddy Bridgewater less. But if we were looking at the average per year of Teddy's contract, it's more than what the Panthers would have paid Cam Newton had he been on the roster. And now you're looking at what the Patriots are going to pay Cam Newton. I mean, it's just incredible. We've all seen the list of quarterbacks that are going to make more than Cam Newton. I mean, good grief. Like, you know, I don't want to dog on Taysom Hill, but he's on that list. And I mean, there's just a host of, you know, crazy. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick is on that list. I think Tua is on that list as far as quarterbacks that are going to make more money this year than Cam Newton. So I have no problem with him coming out and being cocky. He's a fighter. He's a competitor. This is going to be his time to shine. And look, this is he's going to be fun to watch. That's another reason why I want to see football this year, is because I'm really fascinated by what Josh McDaniels is going to do with Cam Newton. I mean, now that he – you know, we thought Jarrett Stidham was going to be the guy. Now you come in and can't see Cam Newton. Yeah, I can even see Ross shaking his head. And it's like, I mean, you're right. Like, we thought Jarrett Stidham, you know, it seemed like he was going to be the guy. But I think – I don't know if I speak for all of us. I know I personally, when Cam was released, New England always seemed like the perfect landing spot. And, you know, you guys can chime in quick if you guys thought that as well. But I thought New England was the perfect landing spot for Cam Newton. And he has a chance to do something special. So I have no problem that he's taking on kind of this whole new attitude, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, I will happily say that I'd never believe Jarrett Stidham was going to be anyone's quarterback. but we'll see. I could still be wrong. And if it makes you feel any better at all, Cam Newton with incentives is still making more than Jameis Winston with incentives. So at least there's that. My question for you is just going back over to the defensive side. You know, I referenced Jeremy Chinn a little bit earlier. Just sort of what's the vision for a guy like Jeremy Chinn? Because he's somebody I was very high on coming into the draft that I'm very excited to see in the NFL. He's the guy that's the sort of anti-Eli Apple for me, whereas I'm happy to see Eli Apple in the Carolina secondary, not as happy to see Jeremy Chinn involved in the Carolina secondary. But is that going to be his focus, or is he going to be more a second level guy?
Yeah, and you mentioned it earlier, Ross, about the whole Isaiah Simmons thing. And so, of course, at first, when the first round of the draft happened and they took Derek Brown, it seemed like he was always their guy over Isaiah Simmons. But the fact that they were able to come back and trade back into the second round to get Jeremy Chinn, who's basically a light version of Isaiah Simmons, just a little more raw, just needs a little more development. But a guy like him, I said, was almost perfect for this Panthers defense because he could play just about anywhere. I think they're going to start him in the back end. It seems like the ultimate goal might be to end up at safety, so you might see him playing opposite Trey Boston at some point. Out of the gates, Justin Burris has that spot, but I definitely think Jeremy Chinn can easily take that spot at some point. He's definitely athletic enough that he can play kind of that free safety role, but he could definitely play nickel corner as well. He can kind of play all over the field. So this to me was almost this was my favorite pick of the draft. And I was a big Derek Brown fan, and they needed that anchor on the interior. But the versatility, remember, we all did that that big mock draft before the draft, all as hosts. And Isaiah Simmons was actually the pick for me at number 7 with Derek Brown on the board because of the versatility that a guy like Isaiah Simmons and in turn a guy like Jeremy Chinn brings to a young defense that is going to need time to develop. I mean, we've all basically said this is not going to be a shutdown defense out of the gate. These are a lot of new guys, and we keep mentioning the weird offseason. These kids just have not had an opportunity to really work together. So this is going to take a lot of time for all these new faces to really gel together. But if there's someone that can get in there and really help take this defense to the next level and just keep helping them improve, it's going to be Jeremy Chinn. So he's going to be so fun to watch on film, and I can't wait to see how they utilize him. And it sounds like, I hope they actually utilize him a lot more, because I know Arizona came out and said they were going to play Simmons at linebacker, and it's like, well, why are you going to pigeonhole a guy like Simmons to just that? I haven't heard anything like that regarding Jeremy Chinn, and I hope that that doesn't end up being the case.
The Cardinals did the same damn thing to Hassan Reddick.
That's true.
They're going to ruin Isaiah Simmons over there.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Hassan, listen, I was a huge fan of Hassan Reddick as well, too, and he was going to be that same guy, but yeah, they never really moved on for him, and now it looks like his future is in question. At least a former Cardinal and a similar versatile guy is now in Atlanta in Dan Buchanan, so he'll be fun to watch. But yes, you've got some intriguing we're talking about all these players. There's a lot of intriguing players individually in this division, whether it's especially in the safety position, I guess, since we're focusing on that. If we're talking Jeremy Chinn, we're talking Dan Buchanan, Antoine Winfield, and then pick your boys in a few New Orleans.
C.J. Garner-Johnson would be the most comparable in the conversation. Yeah.
You don't know. I think there's Panthers fans still out there grumbling that they didn't take Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. I mean, you talk about someone that would have been a great fit for the Panthers. It was him. And how he fell to the fourth round still is beyond me. I mean, that was maybe the steal of the draft. I mean, we almost need to put the gif of that security guard from The Last Dance. That's the perfect gif right now.
Exactly.
Bill, I do have one follow up question that we didn't get the chance to answer. Are the Panthers going to be a 3-4 or 4-3 team?
I think they're going to mix it up. Phil Snow's come out and said, I think they kind of want to be a bit of a hybrid. So I think you're going to see a lot of different looks from this team. And, you know, they certainly have the personnel to do so. Like at the linebacker position, you're going to have Shaq at one end, probably Whitehead on the other. I think Jermaine Carter is a guy that can play all across there. So he's pretty versatile. Andre Smith is another guy that has kind of held steady. You know, he's been more of a special teamers guy, but maybe this is a chance to get some more action. You know, they could run an odd man front, and Derek Brown certainly is going to be that big horse in the middle. But I think he's athletic enough too that he can play that three tech or a one tech. I mean, obviously we've all seen his film. We know just how freakishly athletic he is. And then of course you got kind of your edge guys like Brian Burns. You know, he's a guy that can play with his hand in the dirt in a even man front. He's a guy that can stand up on the outside in an odd man front. So Phil Snow, I think, understands that he has some versatile players, and it's going to allow him to run a lot of different looks. So I don't think they're going to force themselves into one front versus the other. I think you're going to see a lot of mixing and matching in that regard.
Okay, thank you.
So, yeah, a lot of good talk there. Always a pleasure to have you guys on. It was a real great talk with the Panthers. And that will just about wrap up the week here on the division crossover. As I said, we do have our big kind of finale tomorrow to wrap up this whole week. But as far as focusing on teams, this was the end. But we'll certainly be back tomorrow to wrap up what's been an incredibly fun week here on the Locked On Podcast Network with the division crossover. So thank you guys so much for joining me here. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in. And with that, have a great rest of your Thursday, and we will see you tomorrow to wrap up the week here on the division crossover. Until then, take care, my friends.